That's how we've won all year, team, right?
Yes,
but you held them to 20 points, man.
Yes,
sir. You gave us a chance at the end. I got three words for you. You like that?
Yeah!
Kirk Cousins and the Vikings finally silenced the critics and pulled off a stunning upset on a national stage. But in a twist that will surprise absolutely no one, Saints fans are angry with the refs. Are they right? Plus, why the Patriots went out was not a bang but a whimper. And how the Bills imploded at the worst possible moment. I'm Nina Kimes. It's Monday, January 6th. This is ESPN Daily, presented by Dell Small Business. Nobody believes in us.
Hey guys, I wonder who was the first team to use the nobody believes in us?
That's a great question. Bill Barnwell is a senior football writer at ESPN and the host of the Bill Barnwell podcast. Bill, I feel like every year we expect great wildcard games and every year the weekend lets us down, except this time it didn't. All four games were pretty close and two of them even went to overtime. I want to start with one of those games, the Sunday afternoon game, because this was supposed to be the predictable one. The Saints really weren't even supposed to be playing this weekend. A lot of people thought they were the best team in the NFC and they were favored to beat Minnesota by more than a touchdown. Instead, the sixth seed Vikings went into the Superdome and pulled it out. What would you say was the biggest factor behind their upset victory?
It's got to be the defense, right? I mean, this was a game where the Vikings front seven showed up and carried the Vikings to victory. I mean, the defensive line produced one of their best games of the entire season against a really good Saints offensive line. Drew Brees got pressured at the second highest rate for any of his starts in 2019. And then the thing that made the Vikings great on defense in 2017 and 2018, their ability to get off the field on third down, it showed up again. 2017 and 2018, they were the best defense in football on third downs by a considerable margin. The second placed Eagles were closer to 19th place than they were to the Vikings in first. And this year, in 2019, the Vikings themselves were 19th on third down. Sunday, they only got the Saints to convert four times in 11 tries. They get a sack on third down and an interception. So I really feel like that was sort of the key for the Vikings to deliver sort of the defensive performance we might have seen from them in prior years.
In some ways, Bill, we shouldn't have been completely surprised because from a matchup perspective, the Vikings defense was actually pretty well suited to stop New Orleans. All season long, their weakness has been in the secondary. The Vikings corners have struggled, both have had injuries and experienced poor performance at times, and they could be exploited deep. But Drew Brees doesn't really throw the ball deep very often these days. Meanwhile, Minnesota has very strong coverage linebackers and a fearsome pass rush, which, as you mentioned, won in key moments versus a typically very talented Saints offensive line.
Yeah, and then strangely, the other factor for the Vikings winning this game is that, of all people, Sean Payton mismanaged the clock.
Yeah, Bill, I was really confused because at the end of the game, the Saints had, I think, close to enough time to at least attempt a few passes and go for the game-winning touchdown. What happened instead?
Okay, so the Saints march to the Vikings 26-yard line after a really impressive Jared Cook catch and run. They're in field goal range with 34 seconds to go, down 3 points. So basically, they can kick a field goal from this point and tie. Sean Payton could have used his final timeout to stop the clock there, but instead, 13 seconds pass before Drew Brees attempts to spike the ball. That's a minor mistake, but what happened next was a lot worse. These Saints weren't set during the spike, and they were whistled for a procedure penalty, which not only cost them 5 yards, but because the clock was running, cost them a 10-second runoff. Sean Payton could, and honestly, realistically, should have used his timeout to avoid the 10-second runoff. Instead, he decided to let the clock run, the Saints run one more play, and then with 7 seconds left, kick a field goal. At the very least, you have that one timeout. Why don't you trust your Hall of Fame quarterback to run one more play to try and get the ball closer for a game-tying field goal attempt? They kick with 7 seconds left, never even use that timeout. That's a big mistake from a coach who doesn't typically make those sort of mistakes.
So in the end, Kirk Cousins, who, of course, has been much maligned for failing to show up in big games, showed up when it counted in this one. On the Vikings' first and only drive in overtime, he hit Adam Thielen for a beautiful 43-yard pass, and then he threw the game-winning touchdown to Kyle Rudolph.
Touchdown! Amazing decision by Kirk Cousins. He saw the all-out blitz. He knew he had Rudolph one-on-one with the corner.
Rudy!
And just threw the jump ball. Oh, what a beautiful throw!
Now, Bill, I was outraged because it was a goal line fade. And as you know, I hate goal line fades, even when they're successful, maybe especially when they're successful. But Saints fans were outraged because, well, they're always outraged now, often for good reason. But they were outraged in this situation because they thought it should have been offensive pass interference. What did you see?
Oh, boy. I don't want to get Saints fans angry at me, Mina. By the letter of the law, yes, I do think it was offensive pass interference. I also think in reality, those sort of push-offs aren't really called all that frequently. What I do think was totally bizarre is that it wasn't at least sent to New York for a further review. It just does not add up that suddenly they have gotten extremely quick and extremely efficient at adjudicating these very complicated and often subjective replay decisions.
While we're talking about officiating or the lack of officiating, let's shift to the Eagles-Seahawks game and a very important non-call. Bill, Philly came into this game extremely banged up. Then early in the game, they lost their quarterback, Carson Wentz, after he was hit in the back of the head by the helmet of Seahawks defensive end, Jadeveon Clowney. There was no call. What did you think of that?
I don't want to get Eagles fans mad at me either, and I'm afraid that I'm going to. Referee Sean Smith called the hit incidental helmet-to-helmet contact after the game, and I can imagine why Eagles fans would be frustrated. I do think I'm inclined to agree with Smith. I would say at the very least, look at what the players did after the hit happened. If you watch the play, the only person who signals that it might have been a penalty is Eagles guard Hal Vitae. And honestly, even his attempt is pretty half-hearted and he gives up pretty quickly. Nobody else thought it was a illegal hit or even a significant play until Carson Wentz came out. Wentz even took the 5 subsequent snaps before he was pulled out of the game for a concussion evaluation after the possession ended.
Carson Wentz has left the medical tent, but he's heading to the locker room. Another part of this is the independent neurologist was in the tent. He's looking at the video of the hit to determine that injury.
It's an unfortunate hit. I just think the idea that it was a deliberate, dirty act is just a product of Wentz suffering an injury as opposed to something that was pretty clear in the moment based on what happened.
The Seahawks were also fairly battered on offense, particularly along the offensive line. But unlike Philadelphia, they had 2 of their starting wide receivers. And one of those receivers, the rookie DK Metcalf, had really the game of his life, finishing with 160 yards. He ended up finishing this season, Bill, with 900 yards and 7 touchdowns. So I ask you this, how did DK Metcalf fall to the final pick of the second round?
It's a problem I think, Mina, we all can relate to. He was in too good shape to play in the NFL.
Yes, I can relate. It's so hard being so jacked.
Metcalf came to the combine and reportedly was found to have 1.6% body fat, which technically, according to science, is impossible. There was a perception that he was going to be limited as a route runner by his lack of agility. And I do think maybe in a different offense, he might not have been as successful, but this is the perfect offense for DK Metcalf. Russell Wilson has been one of the best deep passers in the NFL this year, and Metcalf is such an inviting target downfield with his size and speed. And hey, I don't want to upset Eagles fans any more than they're already upset Monday morning, but in a game where the Eagles were injured across the board at receiver and playing Zach Ertz through a lacerated kidney, I have to think about J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, who has taken 7 picks before DK Metcalf in the second round. He played 11 catchless snaps during this game. It's unfair to say the difference between Arcega-Whiteside and Metcalf resulted in a Seahawks victory, but Metcalf's success played a huge role, and it has to be a feather in the Seahawks' cap as they head to Green Bay next weekend.
Bill, a feather in your cap is how you correctly pronounced Arcega-Whiteside. Well done by you.
You can tell I've been doing Duolingo.
Coming up, we're going to talk about how the student outsmarted the master in Patriots-Titans and what on earth happened in the Bills-Texans game.
The best teams start with great talent, but finding the right people can be a challenge. I mean, just ask the New York Knicks. When it comes to hiring for your business, ZipRecruiter can help you find the right candidates for your team fast, from healthcare to manufacturing to business services and more. And now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 top job sites, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right skills and experience for your job and actively invites them to apply. You can even add screening questions to your job listing so you can filter candidates and focus on the best ones. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. And right now, to try ZipRecruiter for free, my listeners can go to ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. That's ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
The Tennessee Titans have come into what Mike Vrabel referred to as the Viper's Den, and they have knocked out the champions.
Bill, the two Saturday games kind of fell on opposite ends of the football spectrum. The first game between the Bills and the Texans was, I believe the technical term is bananas. We will get to that in a bit. But I want to start with Titans-Pats, which felt like a much more conventional football game, except for the fact that it had a decidedly unconventional outcome. Tennessee won 21-13, even though their quarterback, Ryan Tannehill, only threw for 76 yards. What happened?
I mean, honestly, Mina, there really wasn't much of a gap between these two teams. The difference really just came down to some small matters of execution. The Patriots made 3 trips into the red zone and scored 1 touchdown. Sony Michel was stuffed on a 3rd-and-goal carry from the 1-yard line. The Patriots settled for a field goal on that drive. The Titans, who have been the league's best red zone offense by a significant margin since Ryan Tannehill took over as their starting quarterback, scored touchdowns on both of their 2 red zone trips. Tannehill fumbled twice, and Tennessee was able to recover both of those fumbles. But in the big picture, I think Tennessee did everything we tell ourselves the Patriots typically do in playoff games, no matter how mundane or how minuscule they might be. The Titans outpunted the Patriots. The Titans took away New England's top offensive weapon, Julian Edelman, caught 3 passes for 30 yards in this game, while Derrick Henry, Tennessee's top weapon, racked up 200 yards from scrimmage. And when the Patriots needed that big play that they always seem to get in the exact moment when they need a big play most, Edelman dropped a 3rd-down pass that ended their last realistic drive with a shot of tying things up.
Motions to the right to join Dorsett. Brady drops back, short set, a throw to Edelman, who drops it far side at the 45-yard line.
Mike Vrabel, the former Patriots linebacker and now Tennessee head coach, was more creative than Bill Belichick, exploiting a loophole in the rulebook to run time off the clock before a 4th-down punt.
I want to talk about that loophole. When the Titans initially lined up to punt at the Patriots 36, it seemed odd. Frustrating even to people like me who don't like it when teams punt at the opponent's 36. And then something even stranger happened. Can you explain it?
Yes. Okay, so if you like when people are hoisted by their own petard, and who doesn't, you're going to love what happened to Bill Belichick and the Patriots in this game. So during the regular season, it's the middle of the 4th quarter of a 33-0 blowout victory over the Jets. Bill Belichick decides to get creative. He wants to run extra time off the clock before punting by having his players deliberately commit delay of game and false start penalties. Because the clock was running before the penalty, and the clock continues to run after penalties are committed until there are 5 minutes left in the game, even though the Jets declined the penalties, Belichick was able to run 50 seconds off of the clock before punting. And afterwards, he suggested the league should close what he termed to be a loophole.
No, it was just the way the rules are set up. We were able to, run quite a bit of time off the clock without really having to do anything. There's probably a loophole that'll be closed, but and probably should be closed, but right now it's open.
One person who was apparently watching was Mike Vrabel. When Tennessee decided to punt from the Patriots' 36-yard line with 6:39 to go, Vrabel launched into action. His team took a delay a game. The clock continued to run. Tennessee deliberately committed a false start. By this point, Belichick realized what was up. He was furious on the sidelines. He actually instructed a Patriots player to commit a neutral zone infraction on the other side of the line of scrimmage in the hopes of stopping the clock. But Vrabel was able to run an extra 68 seconds off of the clock and wind it below 5 minutes before Tennessee was finally forced to punt.
So was all of this legal?
If you saw Bill Belichick fuming on the sidelines, maybe not, but by the rule book, it is. Technically, referees have the right to call for an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty if a team attempts to commit multiple penalties on the same down to try and manipulate the game clock. That wasn't called against Tennessee, though, because they didn't commit multiple penalties on the same down. They committed the same penalty or similar penalties on back-to-back downs. So as much as Bill Belichick was angry about this, there was nothing he could have done.
I think what amazed me most about this maneuver, Bill, aside from the sheer audacity of using Bill Belichick's own tomfoolery against him in a key moment, was that in winding the clock down to a little less than 5 minutes, Vrabel was also betting that his defense could stop the Patriots' offense, right? Because in years past, I think you would assume that just under 5 minutes would have been the perfect amount of time for one of those long boa constrictor-like Patriots drives that bleed the clock and put up just enough points. But that's not what happened. The Patriots offense, as it has all season, fell apart. You could pin that on the personnel, the play calling, but I think it's also evident that Tom Brady has declined. So in 30 seconds or less, is this the end of the Brady era in New England?
I think this is the perfect way to answer this question, so it's the only time I will answer this question over the course of the NFL offseason. I don't think Brady's done. His postgame comments make it pretty clear. He wants to play in 2020, and I think he's good enough to play, given what we saw from him over the course of the season. But where he will play is still in question. His contract voids after the season. He can't be franchise tagged. He put his Boston area house on the market before the season. He just lost in unsatisfying fashion when the offense didn't have much around him. He might very well believe his best chance of winning a Super Bowl is somewhere else. The Patriots would owe $13.5 million in dead money on their 2020 cap if he leaves, and they don't have anything at quarterback behind 2019 fourth round pick Jared Stidham. So I think they should be motivated to keep him.
Bill, a few weeks ago, you and I discussed the possibility that if there is a power void in the AFC East, the Buffalo Bills would be the team to step up and fill it. And for the first half of the afternoon game on Saturday, it looked like that transfer of power had already begun.
Second and six now. End around. John Brown is going to look to pass. Looking for Allen, and he's got it! Touchdown, Bills, on a trick play to start things off.
After a lackluster start, the Texans were down 13-0 at the half, and then total chaos ensued. How did Houston pull off this comeback?
Mina, it just seemed like their stars started to play like stars. J.J. Watt only played 4 snaps in the first quarter. After halftime, he played 34 of 44 snaps. The Texans moved DeAndre Hopkins into the slot to keep him away from Tre'Davious White, and the offense didn't seem to click. He had no catches before halftime. Afterwards, as the pass rush tired, DeAndre Hopkins just got open. He had 6 catches for 90 yards, most of that coming against Tre'Davious White and Deshaun Watson. I mean, just he seemed to take the game over at times. After halftime, he was just too much for the Bills as a runner or a passer. I don't know if you can come up with a better encapsulation of the Deshaun Watson era in Houston than his big play in overtime, where Watson literally shakes off 2 free pass rushers, gets out of the pocket, stares down 3 more unblocked pass rushers, and then finds third string running back Tywan Jones for a huge catch and run to set up the game winning field goal.
Second and 6 here. Watson, pressure off the edge. Watson survives it. And then checks down to Jones. Jones inside the 40.
Bill, I have rewatched that play from multiple angles many times, and I still do not understand how he did it.
I think it's pretty incredible that in a fourth quarter and overtime, where literally the craziest things seem to happen 10 or 12 times, that play still stands out as particularly unlikely.
Well, many of those crazy things fell at the feet of one Josh Allen. If this game was a tale of two halves for Deshaun Watson, I think you could say the same for Allen, right? Who had a very uneven performance with high highs, low lows. What do you think Bills fans can take away from this? And what do you think it tells us about Josh Allen's future?
Okay, this was the perfect playoff game for every single possible opinion anybody on the planet has about Josh Allen. No matter what you think, you were handed more fuel for your feelings by Saturday's loss. If you think he's a star in the making, you saw a ton of great plays, a half dozen beautiful throws from a quarterback who changed the game with his legs and didn't fold under the pressure of that Texans comeback. And if you think Allen is not necessarily an NFL caliber starting quarterback, you saw three dropped interceptions, one of which would have been a pick six, a bomb into double coverage towards a fullback 30 yards downfield, the worst back-to-back sack sequence I may have ever seen in the NFL, and that bizarre lateral as Allen was falling down with a minute to go in the fourth quarter. He posted a passer rating of 69.5 against one of the league's worst defenses. And I mean, realistically, the truth is somewhere in between, right? Allen's best run of games this season came when he was pretty conservative and tried to make safe choices with the football, even if it meant not trying to make big plays. After the Texans launched their comeback, I think we got more of the hero ball Allen, who tried to do the spectacular and put the team on his back like he did at Wyoming and in his first year with the Bills. I think if we see more of the Allen who seemed in control during the first half of this game, I think the Bills will be happy with what they have under center in 2020.
I like that you ended on an optimistic note, Bill. Thanks.
Thanks, Mina.
Coming up, why the Patriots' loss means we're going to hear new stories for the first time in years. Now you can win a $250,000 home renovation designed by the Scott Brothers in an ADT smart home security system. To enter, just head to ADT.com/passtheprotection. And tell us what you want to protect. A beautiful home is great, but a safer home is even better. Now is your opportunity to get both. The winner and the winner's home will be featured in an ADT video with the Scott Brothers. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Ends March 16th. Must be 18 or over and a homeowner as of February 1st, 2020. To learn more about the contest and read the official rules, go to ADT.com/passtheprotection. Here's another story I want you to know. Every year around this time, two traditions kick in for sports writers. College football reporters start brainstorming stories about Alabama, and NFL writers like myself begin the process of trying to cook up new angles on the New England Patriots. We do this because we know, in our hearts of hearts, that these two teams will almost certainly go deep in the postseason. So we try to get a jump on the schedule and prepare some takes and ideas early, which is always a challenge given how familiar everyone is with the existing Bama-New England storylines. I mean, I have lost count of the times I have read the same anecdotes about Julian Edelman earning Tom Brady's trust, or heard the take that the key to stopping New England in a Super Bowl is to rush Brady with four. But we talk about the Patriots because the Patriots are inevitable. Until now.
The Tennessee Titans have come into Foxborough and defeated Tom Brady and the Pats 20-13 in this wild card round. The future unclear for Tom Brady and so many other veteran Patriots. The certainty only that the Pats season has come to a close.
This is uncharted territory. According to ESPN Stats and Info, with New England eliminated from the postseason and Alabama not making the college football playoffs, this is the first time since 2010 that neither the Crimson Tide nor the Patriots are among the final four teams competing in their respective sports. That year, the Patriots lost in the divisional round, and Alabama didn't make the BCS National Championship after going 9-3. Now, after Saturday's loss, both Bill Belichick and Nick Saban will be watching the playoffs from home. On that note, can you imagine trying to watch a football game casually with either of these guys? Like, I'm trying to envision Bill Belichick sitting in a Lazy Boy, wearing a hooded do-your-job snuggie, eating 7-layer dip, probably grumbling about the inefficiency of so many layers, and it just doesn't compute. But it's going to happen. And when the Patriots were eliminated, NFL Twitter looked like the scene in Star Wars where the Ewoks are dancing. Our producer Aaron informs me that the song is called Yub Nub. Thank you for that note, Aaron. Which, I understand. The joy, I get it. The Patriots are inevitable, and they're also exhausting. Dominance is exhausting. Coming up with new stories about them every January has been exhausting. But it's also amazing and should be regarded as such. In a hard-capped league with a draft, there's no reason why any team should remain as successful as long as the Patriots did. Or may continue to do. Because even if this streak is coming to an end, and Brady's future is in the air, I'm not ready to throw dirt on the dynasty just yet. I'm Ina Kimes, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.